What if I told you that I could basically map out your exact learning habits, right? Like the software you use, the way your brain categorizes really complex stuff, all without ever reading a single actual word you've written.
I mean, it sounds like magic,
That
but
sounds totally impossible.
yeah.
But welcome to this deep dive, where honestly, your mission today requires us to do some pretty intense digital forensics.
Yeah, a little bit of sleuthing today.
Exactly, because we are unpacking an incredibly concise source. Like, we don't have a 50-page white paper here.
Right.
We don't have some dense, long-form article. We have a single digital artifact that consists solely of a title and its exact file path on a computer.
It is, it's extreme minimalism, truly, because we're basically looking at a document titled Excerpts from How Computers Read Code, Compilers, Machine Code, and the Call Stack. And literally, the only other data we have is its location on the hard drive, which is users Wilson Wu.Claude Briefs article, How Computer 02 Coda Runs.md.
Okay, I got to push back right away. Let's unpack this.
Sure.
How do we do a meaningful deep dive when we're, basically just looking at the spine of a book and tracking its location on a shelf? I mean, where's the actual
I
text?
know, I know. It sounds like a party trick at first glance, but well, in modern computing, metadata, meaning, the architecture of where a file lives, how it's syntactically labeled, its formatting, that actually reveals a profoundly compelling story.
So the lack of text is almost the point.
Exactly. Metadata is basically the invisible scaffolding of knowledge. It tells us how information is organized, synthesized, and consumed by a human being.
Wow.
So today we are going to reverse engineer the architecture of this person's knowledge system purely from like the exhaust fumes of their file directory.
I love that phrase, the exhaust fumes of their file directory. We're reverse engineering a brain based on how it organizes its digital desk.
Precisely.
So let's start with the title itself, because that basically sets the theoretical boundary for everything else, right? We have excerpts from How Computers Read Code, Compilers, Machine Code, and the Call Stack.
Right. And the very first word there, excerpts, that immediately acts as a filter.
Also.
Well, it means we aren't looking at raw, unfiltered data. We're looking at a highly curated, condensed signal extracted from the noise.
Ah.
Someone, or maybe some autonomous process, has gone through a broader original text and decided what actually matters.
So it was the highlight reel. Then we get this sequence of three technical terms, right? Compilers, machine code, and the call stack.
Yes.
And look, let me challenge you on this, because on the surface, that just looks like a standard computer science syllabus.
It does.
Like, compiler to machine code is just the chronological order of how code works. Is there really anything profound we can extract from just this specific grouping, like, without having the actual text to read?
Okay, so what's fascinating here, and I think a lot of people miss this, is that this specific trio represents the exact pipeline of abstraction collapse.
Abstraction collapse.
Yeah, it's the journey of how human thought physically manifests as electrical action. Think about the conceptual movement here. It starts with compilers, right? And a lot of people, they casually compare a compiler to a translator.
Yeah, like translating English to Spanish or something.
Right, but that doesn't quite capture the, well, the violence of the process. A compiler is more like a manufacturing plant.
Okay, wait, explain that. Because you write a high-level language like Python or C++ they, and the compiler just has to figure out what you meant, right?
Sort of, but it takes the blueprint, your high-level code, which is full of, human logic, readable variable names, nice formatting, and it essentially obliterates all the human context.
Oh, wow. So it's not just translating.
Not at all. It doesn't just translate, it stamps out the physical gears and cogs that the computer's processor can actually spin.
That's a wild way to think about it.
It analyzes your logic, optimizes it, and then literally strips away everything that doesn't directly serve the hardware.
So it completely removes the human intent and leaves only the mechanical function.
Exactly. Which brings us right to the output of that manufacturing plant, the second term in the title, machine code.
Right, the actual gears.
Machine code is the physical reality of computing. It's the raw fundamental vocabulary of the hardware itself.
Which we never actually see.
No, we abstract this away constantly when we use computers. But at the lowest level, your processor only understands binary instructions.
Ones and zeros.
Right, ones and zeros that tell it to flip microscopic electrical switches, move tiny amounts of data into physical registers, and cycle the clock.
And that's hardware specific, right? Like it changes depending on the computer.
Yes, exactly. A compiler doesn't just make generic machine code. It makes machine code for a highly specific physical chip architecture.
Like an ARM processor or an x86 chip.
Spot on.
Okay, so we've moved from the human blueprint to the physical gears, but, you know, gears just sitting on a workbench don't do anything on their own.
Right, they have to be put into the machine and turned.
And that's the third term.
Exactly. That is where the third term activates the call stack.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the engine running.
Yes. We conceptually move from the static physical parts into the live runtime environment. If the machine code is the script and the gears, the call stack is the engine actually running.
You know, I always think of the call stack like making a complex dinner.
Oh, I like that. How do you mean?
Well, you call the make dinner function, right? And that gets pushed onto your mental stack as the primary task.
Okay, yeah.
But to execute that, you realize you need to call the chop onions function.
Right.
So chop onions gets pushed on top of make dinner. But inside that, you have to call the find knife function.
That is a perfect visualization of a LIFO structure.
LIFO. Like last in, first out.
Exactly. The computer has to resolve the very last thing you asked it to do, finding the knife, before it can resolve chopping the onions.
Right.
And it has to do that before it can resolve making the dinner.
It's just a stack of plates.
Yep. It creates what we call stack frames. Every time a function is called, the computer takes a little snapshot of where it currently is, saves its local variables, and pushes a new frame onto the stack.
Okay, so it basically pauses the current job.
Right. It jumps to the new instructions, executes them, and when it finishes, it pops that frame off the stack and uses a pointer to go right back to where it left off in the previous task.
That sounds exhausting.
It manages this complex hierarchy of paused and active tasks millions of times a second.
Wow. And, you know, Stack Overflow, which people hear about all the time, right? Stack Overflow, the website. Mm-hmm. That's just you deciding you need a new tool for every single step of making dinner,
right,
constantly interrupting yourself until you physically run out of counter space and the kitchen just crashes.
Yes. You exhaust the allocated memory for that stack structure. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the title gives us this whole theoretical pipeline translation, raw material, and live execution.
Right.
But a pipeline has to live somewhere.
Yeah.
And the environment it runs in actually tells us more about the user than the title does.
It really does.
So let's look at where this is stored. Users wilsonwu.claudebriefs.
This is where the forensics get deeply, deeply personal.
Yeah. Starting at the root, users wilsonwu immediately grounds this. Like, this isn't a cloud-hosted wiki or a public GitHub repository.
No, this is local execution. We're looking inside a specific user's personal file system.
Right. On their actual hard drive.
Yeah. And in that digital house, we find the .claude directory.
And for a technical user, that dot to the beginning of the folder name carries a massive amount of weight, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The Unix philosophy dictates that prefixing a file or directory with a dot hides it from the standard visual interface.
Is it invisible?
Right. You don't see it when you open your Finder or File Explorer. It's infrastructural.
Meaning you aren't supposed to mess with it.
Exactly. It's meant for application configurations, local daemons, and system state data that the user shouldn't be manually altering because, you know, it might break the application's context.
But tying it specifically to .claude, an artificial intelligence ecosystem, I mean, that represents a fascinating shift in how we manage knowledge.
Totally.
It basically tells us this hidden folder is the local context engine for an AI assistant.
Yes, it points to autonomous knowledge synthesis. I mean, think about the evolution of personal knowledge management for a second.
Hey.
Like 5 years ago, the gold standard was the second brain, using apps like Rome Research or Obsidian.
Oh, yeah, where you'd spend hours organizing notes.
Exactly. You would manually read an article, manually write notes, and manually link the concepts together in a huge graph.
Right.
It was highly intentional, but incredibly slow.
You essentially had to be the compiler for your own brain.
That's a great way to put it. But this file path, it suggests Wilson Wu has evolved to a third brain model.
A third brain?
Yeah. The AI is operating as a background daemon. It's the one compiling the briefs. The Claude hidden directory implies that the messy, computational heavy lifting of summarizing dense technical architectures is happening out of sight.
That is wild. And that leads directly into the subfolder, right? The briefs folder.
Right.
So the AI isn't just dumping raw text. It's formatting it into these highly actionable, dense data packets.
Because a brief lowers the cognitive load of retrieving technical information.
Yeah.
It aligns perfectly with the word excerpts from the title. The user doesn't want the fluff, the historical anecdotes, or the author's long preamble from the original article.
They just want the signal.
Exactly. They want to know how the call stack manages memory, and they want the AI to forge that information and serve it up instantly.
It's just the ultimate low-friction learning workflow. You feed the system a dense, multi-page article in compilers, the AI synthesizes it in a hidden directory, and then it outputs a highly structured brief that you can consume in 2 minutes.
It's brilliant. Which brings us to the mechanics of the file itself.
Yes, let's get into the file name.
Because the title gave us the theory, the directory gave us the environment, but the file name gives us the operational reality.
Right. Article how computers 02coderuns.md.
Let's dissect that syntax. First, article how computers.
This basically acts as a provenance tag, right?
Exactly. It confirms the origin format. It wasn't a YouTube video or an audio transcript. It was text.
Which matters because
it grounds the data in its original medium, which is important for understanding how the AI processed it. Text requires different parsing algorithms than a transcribed audio file.
Right, okay. Then we hit the structural core of this entire file name, the O2.
Yeah, this is key.
Now, I know why a developer uses a leading zero. Right, so the computer sorts 01, 02, 10 correctly instead of wildly listing 10 before 2.
Right, standard sorting logic.
But beyond just basic alphabetical sorting, what does this actually imply about the user system?
It implies programmatic parsing and a chronological knowledge graph.
Break that down.
When you use a leading zero and strict underscore delimiters, you aren't just naming a file for human eyes. You are naming it so a machine can easily query it.
You're basically building an API for your own notes.
Yes. The strict syntax means a script, or the local Claude agent, can instantly pull up all files related to how computers in sequential order.
Wow.
It proves this document is part of a larger architecture. There is undoubtedly an O1 file, and the leading zero suggests they're anticipating at least 10, maybe up to 99 parts in this series.
That just shows incredible intentionality. Like, they aren't just saving a random snippet they found online on Reddit or something.
No.
They are actively constructing a multi-part foundational database on computer science.
Exactly. And the next phrase, coderuns, acts as the thematic anchor for this specific sequence.
Which ties seamlessly back to our analysis of the title.
Yep. We moved from the static translation of the compiler to the active execution of the call stack. The phrase coderuns verifies that part two of this series is strictly focused on the runtime environment.
It's the execution phase.
Yes, it's where things actually happen.
Okay, so finally we arrive at the file extension, MD Markdown. Now, most technical listeners use Markdown daily, but let's look at it through the lens of this specific AI workflow. Why is Markdown the absolute lingua franca for a system like this?
Oh, it all comes down to token efficiency and semantic density.
Token efficiency.
Yeah, if this were a Microsoft Word document or a PDF, it would be bloated with proprietary formatting code, font structures, and like visual layout metadata.
Right, the invisible stuff that makes it look pretty.
Exactly. And that bloat is an absolute disaster for an LLM's context window. It wastes valuable processing tokens on invisible layout rules.
Because the AI is trying to read the text, but it has to wade through 1,000 lines of code just dictating the page margins.
Exactly. Markdown strips all of that away. It is pure semantic structure.
Right, a hash mark tells you it's a header. An asterisk tells you it's a list.
Yeah, it's a high bandwidth data transfer format between the AI and the human. It renders beautifully for the user, but under the hood, it's essentially raw, incredibly lightweight data that the AI can generate and parse at lightning speed.
That makes so much sense. So let's pull all these threads together.
Let's do it.
We started with literally just a file path and a title. We had no body text, no definitions, no code snippets.
Nothing but the exhaust fumes.
Nothing but the exhaust fumes. And yet, we've constructed a highly detailed profile of a power user's workflow.
We really did.
I mean, we mapped out a conceptual pipeline of how human abstraction collapses into physical machine reality through compilers in the call stack.
Right.
We explored the shifting paradigm of personal knowledge management, moving from manual node linking to AI-driven hidden local synthesis.
Yeah, the third brain.
The third brain. And we saw how strict naming conventions and lightweight markdown formats create this frictionless programmatic learning environment.
The context truly is the content here. I mean, when a system is this deliberately designed, the metadata basically acts as a mirror to the user's mind.
That's beautifully put.
The way they store the information tells us exactly how deeply they intend to understand it.
Which brings us back to our digital ghost. We extracted an entire masterclass in system architecture from article how computers 02 coda runs.md.
Yeah, we did.
But, you know, it leaves a lingering question, something for you to mull over as you organize your own digital life and maybe set up your own local AI workflows.
Oh, I think I know where you're going with this, the missing pieces of the sequence.
Exactly. If Wilson Wu's hidden.claude directory contains this flawlessly structured AI-synthesized O2 brief on the runtime mechanics of the call stack,
then what foundational blueprints are hiding in the mysterious part 01?
Right. What physical hardware constraints are being detailed in 03?
And just how vast is this hidden knowledge base operating silently in the background of their machine?
It really makes you wonder what your own file structures say about how you learn.
It does. The metadata never lies.
It sure doesn't. Keep digging, everyone.